Hey everybody, it's Retro Raw Rundown time. I'm Kenny McIntosh. I'm in a double hotel room in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. They have given me an accessible hotel room, which means it's for people in wheelchairs, so there is a lot of space. Therefore, there is echoing. So that's something. And I'm joined by Sondra, who joins me on the retro train. Toot, toot. Hi, Sondra.
We're on a train now?
I don't know. It's been a long week.
It has been a long week for you. Yay. I'm aboard this train and excited to talk about Praying Brian Pillman and lots of talking on this episode. And it's also been a week since I watched it. So it's a good thing I wrote some notes down because I really don't remember a whole lot.
Luckily, it's another good episode, though, overall.
It was. Like, I remember enjoying it, and it went fairly quickly
as
I was watching, which is good. Yeah, especially with Retro Raw, when sometimes it just does not.
Yeah, of course. So a couple of things before we start the show. First of all, we are now fully on the expressway to Goldberg at the end of June in the UK.
So you sound like WWE with all of their road metaphors.
I know, I'm just too used to it and I have to do it myself. But
the fast lane on the express byway to the Goldberg tour.
Goldberg, end of the line. But Goldberg is going to be at the end of June in the UK. You can come and see him with us. It is going to be an excellent show. He has never spoken at length about his career. He is going to. What did he think about this full run that he had this year? Losing to Kevin Nash at Starrcade, WCW, Hogan, The Politics, Bischoff, WWE, The First Run, The Rock, Vince, Triple H, all the stuff that you want to hear. We will talk about it in depth on stage. Tickets for that are just £30 plus booking fee. There are limited VIP tickets left to meet Goldberg, and that is going to be through insidetheropes.co.uk. There are VIP tickets left for Glasgow. They're sold out for London and Manchester. Now, the original plan was to do the Jackhammer VIPs, then do the show, then do the other VIPs. I'm actually thinking about switching that now and doing Jackhammer VIPs, then regular VIPs, and then doing the show. Because I know a lot of people have got transport that they need to get to, so I'm trying to work that out. I should have an answer later on this week on that, or early next week. So get your tickets there at insidetheropes.co.uk. Also, you can get on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get extra content. If you're a $3 pledger or more, you'll get David and I's payback review, which there's a lot of good feedback about on Twitter, so you can listen to that. Sondra and I do retro pay-per-view reviews on there. There is loads of stuff on there for you. More coming up. The lost episode of Inside the Ropes from April 19th, 2012 is being sent to me tonight, so that will be added on there as well. That's all the Patreon stuff, I think. But the last thing I wanted to just kind of cover, I did cover it on Patreon, so if you've listened to the payback review, sorry that I'm just, you know, saying the same thing. But the Alberto El Patron stuff, let's talk about it very quickly. So we had the tour with Stu Bennett, aka Wade Barrett. It went really well. The really fun shows. Thank you to everyone who came out and watched it. You can go on our YouTube channel and watch Stu Bennett become Beg Me from Trainspotting, which is one of the most
fun
to film. really good fun. But all I can really say is that over the weekend, some stuff happened. There was circumstances beyond our control and beyond Alberto's control, and I made the decision. It was not Alberto. Alberto was willing to go ahead with the show. I made the call to cancel the event. So if you get any comments about that, please direct them at me, not him. He did not bail on us at all. It's just he had some stuff going on. I felt it was better to not go ahead with the show. I made the call on Sunday night to indefinitely postpone it, and I think it was the right move. I can't really say much more than that. But, I never wanted to have to cancel a show. Trust me, if I could have not cancelled it, I would have. It's just I felt that, you know, we do these high-quality shows, and I pride myself on that, and I think that we might not have been able to give the full attention, focus, and quality to it that we usually do, so I had to cancel. And then some people might say, well, why did you book him in the first place? And, you know, maybe that's my bad that I sort of took the risk on that to do it. But again, he has some stuff going on. I don't really want to get into that. I felt it was best to not go ahead. Everyone will have a full refund by Friday. If you were going to the show, you will have 25% off a general admission ticket for any Inside the Ropes show in the future that you want to cash it in for. Or if you were a VIP, you get 15% off VIP at any future show plus a free poster. So we're trying to add a little bit of value there to apologize for the short notice. And that's pretty much all there is to say on Alberto. Retro Raw time!
Retro Raw time! I just don't really have that much to add because it doesn't concern me. So.
Yeah, fucking Saunders. It doesn't concern me. I'll just fucking stay away in my corner.
Well, no, it's just like, I mean, what more can I even add to the discussion? I wasn't there and I wasn't a part of the situation. I can say that I support you in your decision, knowing why you went ahead with what you decided to do.
True. Thank you for that. That's all I needed, Saunders, was that validation. And then now I can relax.
I'm sure that is the one thing that was just going to make your life just A-okay from now on. That's how important I am, everyone.
You are. Don't be silly. So let's talk about Retro Raw. It's the April 28th episode of Raw is War. It was the episode 207 on the network, if you're following along with us. I know some people had said on Twitter that they've just recently started watching these shows along with us, so welcome to Retro Raw Land, where I go back and watch moments from my childhood and Sondra goes back and sees what the big fuss was about that everybody talks about. So we're kind of going
in. Sometimes I see what the big fuss was about and sometimes I just am left wondering.
And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of doing this, is that sometimes you love stuff and sometimes you go, but why, Kenny? And I can't answer you.
Yeah. I'd be like, but why does everyone love this? Why? I don't understand.
So we kick off the show with like a 4-minute recap of the Austin Brett stuff from the week before, because it takes like 4 minutes, realistically.
Because, yeah, it was quite long. You see Shawn Michaels with a chair. You also see Brian Pillman coming out and attacking, because at the end of the show last week, he attacked and everything. And it was the first time we'd really seen him other than in backstage segments groping Sonny for, you know, quite a while. We hadn't seen Brian Pillman, you know, actually being in action since right before the whole gun situation went down.
Yeah, so it's, you know, so Brian Pillman obviously returned last week, but now he's back. He did a promo to explain himself, but before he can really do anything, Steve Austin interrupts. Steve Austin's gunning for Brian Pillman, but Bulldog and Orin are there. It's a trap to try and get Steve Austin, and then they all pray for Brett in a beautiful moment where they all are praying for the recovery of Brett the Hitman Hart. And as they try to do that, Steve Austin's back with what looks like a sledgehammer to run them off. And that's
they said it was an axe handle.
Okay, well, it looked like a sledgehammer to me.
But yeah, it did look like a sledgehammer. It looked like he definitely took the head off of some sort of handle and went to attack them with the handle. Like, I don't know, well, maybe he just doesn't want to do any murders. Like, that's why he didn't leave the axe or the sledgehammer on the handle.
Do you do well, a murder? Is that the adjective?
No, I don't think so, but sometimes that's how I say it.
I mean, he did a murder, you know, so...
Yeah. But you don't want to do murders. As in, you don't want to murder anyone.
Or commit
mocking my
a
strange
murder.
Forms of speech.
Listen, there's times...
to commit a murder, I guess that would make more sense.
You mock me so much about stuff that I say, or like, if I don't say something the right way. You're a debate coach.
I know.
And you're telling people to do a... Well, you're not telling people to do a murder. You're just...
I'm not telling anyone to do a murder. Don't twist my words.
But I thought this was a fun opening promo in terms of, like, basically set everything up. You know, Pillman's back. He's kind of in cahoots with Bulldog and Owen. Austin wants to kill them. Nice and simple.
Yeah, he super does. I think it's really interesting. I didn't expect when Brian Pillman came back that, you know, it was just going to start with him speaking and talking about how he is deeply religious and he became disturbed after last week's Raw. And I was like, oh, is this when he joins the other Canadians? And sure enough, it was. And, you know, he asks each and every one of the audience to join him in prayer, and he starts actually, like, praying, and He's like, those among us who assaulted and something, something, the devious actions of Stone Cold Steve Austin and something about bloodthirsty violence that pervades our society. And he gets down on his knees and, you know, and I'm like, and men with bad hair in the audience boo him for praying because of course they do. And he's like, open your hearts and minds and let Bret Hart in, the savior of the WWF. It was all so over the top and I loved it.
Yeah, it was great. And then
it being a trap because Bulldog and Owen are here to attack him. It was like, it was really chaotic. And, you know, he's calling them Brother Owen and Brother Davey. And it reminded me kind of CM Punk and the Street Edge Society.
Yeah, there's definitely similarities there. And, you know, Austin is doing exactly what you'd imagine Austin would do, which is try to beat them all up with a weapon.
Of course. And I mean, he says, I don't know where you're going, but you better give your soul to the Lord or somebody because your ass is mine.
So good.
Because he's so good.
But do you know what's interesting is, you know, we end up seeing Flash Funk versus Rockabilly. And what I didn't realize, Sandra, was that apparently repackaging yourself and aligning yourself with the Honky Tonk Man makes you even shiter than you were before.
He's so much worse now than he was when he was just Billy Gunn. Like, he's
loses
so much
to Flash Funk.
Yes, he does.
But yep. they do batter Flash Funk with another heirloom.
They do. Indeed. Another heirloom is used. I mean, this is so shit, though. How... What is Rockabilly trying to do when he does that? What I think he thinks is dancing, but he just, like, puts one arm up and one arm down like he's gonna disco or something, and then, like, just... shakes his butt, kind of, and I'm like, I can't even describe it. It's like he has some sort of twitch. It's not good. It's like his back is spasming, and he needs help. I feel like he's in distress whenever he does this. It's... Oh. I mean, at one point, Flash Funk sends Rockabilly into Honky Tonk Man, and it's probably supposed to get more of a reaction than it does, because, you know, oh man, he's hitting his protege. Ah, what is happening? But nobody cares.
Nobody cares whatsoever. Nobody cares. So there's that. Yeah, but it's funny, like Flash Funk, who has pretty much not done anything for like 3 months, is still able to get the victory over Rockabilly with relative ease.
Yeah, it's not even that difficult. I mean, it's not long. I think I have like 5 bullet points, and it's pretty much everything I just said, so nothing about the match, because it super didn't matter. And I kind of liked Billy Gunn, too. That's the thing, is I didn't come into this, like, hating Billy Gunn and thinking he was shite. I mean, Bart was the worst one of their team, in my opinion. I kind of liked Billy. He seemed, you know, snotty, and I like his kicks, and Rockabilly's just terrible. The Honky Tonk Man is poison, Kenny.
He is. He still is. How surprised were you to see that Bret Hart has turned up a week after surgery to continue the storyline?
A week after actual surgery, mind you.
5 days, to be specific.
5 days. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, he comes on the ramp and cuts an excellent promo where he talks about, you know, hating America and how America, you know, looks up to guys like Stone Cold Steve Austin or Shawn Michaels. He talks about him being the best, and like Bret Hart has this way of, like, you know, if you look at the trajectory of Bret Hart and his return, like there's so much time where you sympathize with Bret Hart about everything that happened to him. And then he became a bit of a dick. You know, like even if you take aside our absolute, you know, non-interest in Shawn Michaels.
Non-interest is like the nicest way of putting it.
Yep. But like, he attacked a guy who had a knee injury, apparently. And he put him in a figure four around the ring post. And, you know, when he'd beaten Steve Austin at WrestleMania, it wasn't like he was content beating him. He had to make him pass out with blood, and he wanted to go back and beat him further. And like, so he's become a bit of a dick. But even when he's done that, you still kind of feel a little bit sorry for him.
Yeah.
He's in this wheelchair, and he's just, like, talking about America and how they have these, like, awful heroes they look up to, which is funny because that's been one of your things that you've been mentioning on the show, is that like Steve Austin is not really a babyface.
And yeah, he's not.
And Bret Hart's almost like your voice.
Bret Hart is so my voice here. He's like, why would you look up to Steve Austin? And I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think he is badass. I think he's fantastic and one of the best parts of the show. But he's not a really good guy that I'd be like, yeah, I want to be like that guy. Because he's still going around attacking people in an ambulance. It's the same way, like, I freaking love Braun Strowman right now, right? But he's not necessarily being like a good guy. He's just being cool as shit. So I think there's a difference there. Like, Bret Hart still seems, even though he's being kind of a dick about it, and I think he's being more of a dick here than, like, I don't know, some other baby faces would necessarily, because he did attack Steve Austin, or he did attack Shawn Michaels and put his knee around the ring post. But the problem is, I don't like Shawn Michaels, so it was really gratifying for him to attack Shawn Michaels' knee, right? So the alignments are just all wrong for me in this story. And the way Bret Hart is talking, you know, I mean, even though he's talking about, you know, slimy Americans and, you know, no matter how much you pray, Brian, every once in a while when slimy, rotten hyena breaks through and makes a kill on a lion, he actually says makes a kill on a lion. So maybe doing a murder isn't that ridiculous of a thing to say. But, you know, he's like, all the praying in the world won't help Stone Cold Scum of America. And, you know, not just one hyena, it's a whole pack. You're all just a bunch of lousy, stinking hyenas. He says the word hyenas a lot. But everything he's saying, though, as he's sitting there in a wheelchair looking very sympathetic, as you say, like, he legitimately just had surgery. And he's still back on television. And he's still furthering this storyline. And I think I loved, especially when he was like, go ahead and chant your USA. My mother's American. Like, sort of, not all Americans, maybe. Like, some of them are okay. But as a race, or as, like, not a race, but, like, as a country, you are rotten. And he's like, you know, I'm back. I'll be out of commission for a while. But he's like, that ambulance better stay close for Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels, because, you know, he does have a group with him, right? Like, he has Owen and Bulldog and apparently Pillman on his side, which is really cool. And I think I had mentioned it last week, too. But the whole reason that Steve Austin and Pillman had a problem in the first place was because of Bret Hart. So the fact that Pillman is joining Bret Hart now makes so much sense. It's really great. There's, I love the logic there.
There's a lot of interesting kind of subtleties to everything. Like, you're not being spoon-fed every piece of the story, and there's a lot of stuff that makes sense and ties into each other, and just really good storytelling.
It feels like an organic progression as well, which is helpful.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like, where did this come from? It came out of nowhere. Like, Bret Hart's decline into being a quote-unquote heel. Like, he is a heel. And that's why I think it's interesting to know how it played overseas and how it played in Canada, because I guess he did apologize for some of his dastardly deeds towards Shawn Michaels or towards Steve Austin. You know, he apologized to Canada, he apologized to Germany, he apologized to, you know, the UK. He was like, I just don't apologize to the Americans that I'm beating up, and he's only beating up Americans. So I guess if you buy into that division, then he could still be a babyface overseas, even though he has been kind of a dick. I don't know. It's really interesting. The whole dynamic is fascinating, and I don't think it's something that can really be duplicated, because I don't know if you'll ever get this kind of an organic progression again, which is maybe why some tweener characters nowadays don't ring quite as true.
Yeah, for sure. We do get an ad for the Legion of Doom in action next, and I found the way to pitch that quite strange, because it was like, LOD broke Henry Godwin's neck last week, but they're in action next. Lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Can we talk a little bit about these reality check commercials?
Oh, did you think I was going to bypass this? So we have this reality check ad where a grandfather has...
Mr. and Mrs. Duncan have a father.
Mr. and Mrs. Duncan have a father. The granddad has lost his wife. And he is cheered up by watching the World Wrestling Federation. That's what cheers him up. So he then, his adult daughter, who seems to be a mother, and her husband,
yes,
are trying to, like, console the grandfather. And he loves watching WWF. So then he ends up becoming Vader with the mask on and just doing Vader noises. And then he puts on the Mankind mask and tries to mandible claw his daughter. And this is an advert to show you that WWF is giving you a reality check.
Now, what is the purpose of this ad? Because all I have written down is Mr. and Mrs. Duncan have a father who wears various masks and is suffering from dementia, probably. Reality check? Like, what is the reality check?
The idea is not that he's suffering from dementia. It's that when he lost his wife and didn't think there was anything else to live for, he then found the World Wrestling Federation.
Oh. So it's just a commercial for the World Wrestling? I was wondering if it was, like, in some weird roundabout way, a don't try this at home.
No, this was a...
This was a try this at home?
When you're old and you think there's nothing left to live for, you can put on Mankind's mask and try and mandible claw your daughter.
Oh, so this is actually a try this at home commercial in a roundabout way. Intriguing. There's another one later on.
Which we'll
but
get. I thought this was
which
amazing.
Which we'll get to.
I've never seen this
These
one
are.
Before.
Oh, this was fantastic. I loved this commercial. I had no idea what it was trying to tell me. None. I was like, I don't know what the reality check is supposed to be. I thought they were going to tell me not to smoke or something, but they didn't. They just said reality check. I was like, in what way?
If anyone so wants confused. To tweet us and tell us what the reality check is, please feel free.
Tell me what you think the reality check is. Tell me what you think it could have been. I want the craziest theories because that would kind of make my day.
The Legion of Doom battled Phil LaFon and Doug Furness, making their Raw return. They've not been around in a while.
And apparently they're very frustrated about it, about not having support. And also they wear jackets now. And are they heel now too? Because the tag team division needed more heel teams.
I think they're going heel. And what's funny is, like, LOD tried to beat them with the Doomsday device, but then obviously, like, Animal gets chop blocked. So Hawk just does a top rope clothesline, which seems to be just as effective because it pins them and wins the match. So I don't really think you need to even put a guy on the shoulder anymore. Just have Hawk go up and do a clothesline.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the basic brunt of the move anyway, but it's...
And then I guess the story really is we get the post-match promo where Furness and LaFon are complaining. There's not really too much sense to what they're actually complaining about, but at least they have a story, I suppose.
Because they're frustrated because they have a home field advantage every night. Like, they say that the LOD has a home field advantage every night here because everybody loves them, and it took two of them to beat one of us.
Which is not true, but yeah, okay.
Which is not true at all. And so LaFon's like, we want rematch and rematch soon. Like, okay, but you don't really deserve one because they just beat you. Like, they didn't really cheat or anything. They just, like, beat you because they were bigger. I would say they were better, but, like, LOD are kind of shit. So Furness and LaFon are basically just wrestling around them and making this a decent match.
For people who have not, for people who know all the stuff that happens, I'm going to make a prediction for you now. And we're about a year away from this. I will bet you two things. Number one, Sondra will not grow to love LOD. I think it's just one of these things of, you know, they were, if you were around when they were a thing, you might have loved them, but they don't translate well to years later if you're just watching.
Well, and also this is like their second, like, later run.
Yeah, this is
after
the...
they were a huge thing, and that's how I'm being introduced to them. So
yeah, exactly. But what I will tell you is, if you have watched this stuff before, I'm gonna say one thing, and I bet you Sondra fucking loves it, and that is LOD 2000.
I've heard of this, and it sounds delightfully shit.
So
I know there's something called Heidenreich involved, and I don't know what that means.
No, he's not involved in that.
No?
No, Heidenreich's way later.
Oh. One time you said LOD 2000 and Heidenreich in the same sentence. I thought they were the same thing.
There are variations. But basically, LOD 2000 is in about a year's time where they try to modernize the Legion of Doom.
That sounds like it could be terrible. And I'm so excited. It's so many years away. Is it actually in the year 2000?
No. It's in 1998.
Oh, okay, good.
Why would it be in 2000,
Sondra? Well, because it's LOD 2000.
But it's the World Wrestling Federation.
I know. Granted, one of my favorite teams right now in Chikara is Cyberhawks 2000, and they were in the year 2000 because it's 2017, so whatever. Well, I just didn't know.
You just disproved your own point.
I did.
Okay. We get shown
clips. No, I was saying, well, no, okay, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess adding 2000 to things back then was like the future, right?
Busted had a song called The Year 3000. That was in 2002.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the song 1999 wasn't in 1999. It's just I thought LOD 2000 might have been in the year 2000, because why not? I didn't know.
We get clips from Shotgun Saturday Night where the Headbangers do a sunny after-hours show on the top of the stage in a bed.
Yeah, the Headbangers are going to bed with Sunny for some reason. There's apparently a segment called Sunny Undercover.
It's really weird seeing Sunny in a bed when she's hot, because I'm used to, like, Skype.
The Sunny on a bed photos from a few years back?
Yeah, or, like, Skype tweet Sunny with her big baps and her pearls, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's if Sunny's getting her baps out, she's got those pearls on. That's her. That's
yeah.
That's the Twitter notification.
That's her sexy outfit.
Run as fast as you can.
I like the idea that you actually have a Twitter notification for Sunny so that you will, like, actively run away from anywhere that Skype is happening.
You never know. You click the wrong button, you get a fucking bap in your face. It's not good.
You just don't want it. Not one of those, anyway.
Not one of those ones. So, we have that. There's not really much
to
say. Why do they show this? I don't really understand.
I don't understand it either. Is it supposed to make you watch Shotgun Saturday Night because Sunny will sit in a bed or something? It's not like, okay, when
the
they teased a Sunny sex tape, it turned out to be her fucking Elmo. So anything they tease in any sort of sexy way from now on, I'm just going to expect some sort of weird puppet to show up.
I can't blame you. It's a very realistic, it's a very understandable and realistic expectation.
This is what I've been given to work with, Shotgun Saturday Night. This is your fault.
If that wasn't weird enough, we cut backstage to get a promo with Ahmed Johnson.
And he's in a foul mood.
Classic Ahmed. Vintage Ahmed, you might say.
Yes.
He's so angry, and he rapes the camera with his eyes.
It's quite Ahmed of Ahmed Johnson.
He's
here.
Very
he's like,
angry.
I don't know what to expect from me. You want a gang fight? You get it, Farouk. You want to get crazy? I'll get crazy. And he talks about fighting three guys. He's like, I'm gang member, baby. Remember that.
He is gang member.
He is gang member. And also, does he think that he is a one-man gang?
Well, he's not the one-man gang, I'll tell you that.
I know
right
he's
now.
Not the one-man gang.
Just let's not be giving him too much credit here. Listen, asking me to understand Ahmed Johnson is... I mean, I spent 3 hours with a guy. And I understood him less afterwards.
Yeah, no, that's accurate. I mean, I love him. There's just something fascinating about Emma Johnson being so unintelligible. I can understand what he's getting at, kind of, but not really in any sort of meaningful way. Like, I understand that in Ahmed Johnson's mind, all of this makes sense.
What a world that would be to live in.
I mean, it's a world of striped pants and hungry ass eating big red trunks and thigh pads, and I mean...
I need to show you, actually? And I can't remember if it's like... No, I'm not going to say anything, because I think it might actually be this year. Never mind. There's a really, really funny gif of Ahmed Johnson, and it's at a King of the Ring, and I can't remember if it's 96 or 97. I think it's 97. So I'm going to find out for next week, and if it's not 97, I'll show you it. But it's really funny. Anyway,
now I'm all excited.
We see Bret Hart giving advice to the Hart Foundation because up next we're going to have Rocky Maivia defend the Intercontinental Championship against Owen Hart. So
and Brian Pillman is kissing Slammies like they're holy objects.
As he should.
Which I just loved.
So we get Rocky Maivia versus Owen Hart. And it is just fine. You know, it's one of Rocky's better matches because he's in there with Owen. So, you know, Owen's good. And... Owen wins the Intercontinental Championship. Sandra, how thrilled were you?
I was so excited. Now, I was wondering, because from what I know, like, I knew that Owen Hart needed to become Intercontinental Champion sometime before SummerSlam. I knew that that happened. And it was funny because as I was watching the episode just before this, I was like, how is that going to happen? Because I was actually thinking about all the pieces that I know and how they don't fit together without, you know, missing stuff that I'm going to find out. So I was like, how the fuck is Owen Hart going to get the Intercontinental Championship before SummerSlam? Because it seems like Owen and Bulldog are, you know, in their Hart Foundation storyline, and Rocky Maivia really has nothing to do with it and all of that. And then I hear at the beginning of this show, it's going to be Owen Hart versus Rocky Maivia for the Intercontinental title. I was like, is it just here? Is it just, does this just happen? Like, the way that Rocky Maivia just sort of randomly became Intercontinental Champion one day, Owen Hart is just going to randomly become Intercontinental Champion? And apparently so. Like, apparently that's exactly what happens, is Owen just wins. I mean, obviously he dedicated this match to his brother, his wounded brother, who just had surgery, Bret Hart. And Bret and Bulldog are watching it, and, like, so he's like, you know, making a big deal of dedicating it to Bret and dedicating it to the family. And he's doing it for the family like any good babyface would. I mean, what? And he just, yeah, he just wins. And it was pretty decent. Like, I love Bulldog on the ramp doing motions.
Bulldog's celebration
like,
is the best.
Oh, his celebration's so good. But even mid-match, like, as Owen's wrestling Rocky Maivia, Bulldog's going like, yeah, hit him. And, like, doing motions on the ramp, like, yeah, hit him, punch him now, yeah. And, like, as if to, like, you know when you're playing a video game and, like, and I say video game, I mean, like, old Nintendo, right? But, like, you need to, say you're playing Mario Kart and you need to turn, and you need to turn quickly, so you lean as if that's going to help.
Your body turns with the controller.
Your body turns with the controller. Yeah, exactly. Because, and this is before, you know, that actually made a difference, where moving controllers made a difference, because I don't play video games created after, like, 1995, right? But your body turns because you're so into it, and it's like, no, this will absolutely help. And that's exactly what Bulldog's doing on the ramp. Like, him doing punching motions is not going to make Owen punch, but he's just so into it. He's like, no, I need to help him along. I need to cheer him. I need to, maybe it's that spiritual energy that Brian Pillman has been instilling in them backstage, right?
The best thing about it, though, is, like, so you get Bulldog doing this great sort of, like, yeah, he's supporting Owen throughout it all, and he does this great celebration, and then they have Bret do a victory lap in the wheelchair.
Yes.
with the belt and the slammies.
Because they give the belt to Bret after the match, which was awesome. What I thought was really fascinating, though, and what solidified the babyface turn here for me, is Owen saying, we did it, right? When, as tag team champions, he was like, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always the one taking the credit for everything. And now, he's like, yeah, we did it together, your celebration of the family for my Intercontinental Championship. You know, and he could barely even acknowledge the fact that Bulldog won the European Championship on his own. But now, you know, Owen is also sharing the glory of his Intercontinental Championship win, and I think it's quite beautiful.
One of the most fascinating things in wrestling for me, like, of all time, is the journey of British Bulldog becoming a babyface to then it not actually following through and Owen and Bulldog staying together.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating because, and it works. It just naturally works.
It, for some reason, I mean, it was very abrupt with the whole promo from Bret Hart, but I really like them together, and it feels like they have kind of a new life to their team now that it's not just dissension all the time. I like that they're a family, and I like that they're together and supporting one another. I think it's great. Also, did you notice that Rocky did a rock bottom in this match?
Yes. Yes, he did.
And it's just a transitional move.
It's almost like when you see early singles Shawn Michaels in 92 against, like, Tito Santana when he's El Matador or whoever, and he does a crescent kick. Which is a switch in music, you know. But it's just a transitional move. It's not a finisher. I like when you see stuff like that. It's cool.
So it was kind of fun with, you know, just the progression of it. It's like, oh, okay, I guess we're starting to see little glimpses of The Rock. But Rocky's still, he's still learning, for sure. I think he's getting better,
yeah.
But...
Also,
like,
big shout out to The Rock, Robert Duffin's favorite wrestler. Happy birthday to Rock.
It's his birthday today, isn't it?
I know Robert's going to be sticking on some of them classic Rock matches for the occasion, so we toast our glass to Robert.
I like how we're toasting to Robert on The Rock's birthday.
Yeah. Although Robert's retaliation to that on Twitter was calling me a sex offender, so cool. We just cut backstage to see Steve Austin in a wheelchair, which was tremendous.
Still with his axe handle.
With his axe handle, just wheeling about back and forth. And then he does a promo, right?
He comes out to speak with Vince.
Yeah. He comes out, does the promo, and I don't really have anything written down about it, so I can't really remember the full promo, if you have anything to add to it.
Well, it was kind of funny, because Steve Austin was like, who wants to see a wheelchair match? Because he basically is challenging Bret Hart right here. And he's like, I take that back. I ain't going to promise that because I'm a lying SOB. Because he was saying that he was going to, you know, take on Bret Hart right there. And he was like, and I'll stay in my wheelchair and, you know, I'll fight you and we'll have a wheelchair match. And then he says, you know, I take that back. I ain't going to promise that because I'm a lying SOB because Austin's the best, right? And he knows, like, he's still a dick. And he says something about, like, I look in the mirror every day and I see my people, because he's talking about how Bret Hart is saying, you know, Americans are bad and saying that Steve Austin is bad or whatever. And the promo, I think, is supposed to be about Steve Austin facing The Undertaker, because he says, on May the 11th, Undertaker, you will see the coldest day in hell. And so it was actually, I think last week we were trying to figure out when he actually said cold day in hell, and I think it's actually here. And then he says, you know, you're looking at the next WWF champion, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so, to which Bret comes on the Tron to respond to say that Austin's going to be in the ambulance before the night is through.
Yeah. Again, just logical progression to everything that's happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We then cut to clips of Vader on Kuwaiti TV manhandling the TV host again. Sadly, no toy bars this week.
I miss the toy bars, definitely. But still cracks me up the Undertaker's just sitting there. Like, I'm convinced he's asleep.
Yeah, I love, though, like, if you watch the full interview on YouTube, you can just see Undertaker's just like, what the fuck is going on?
I am not getting involved in any of this.
Yep. And it's the fact that he's got the glasses on as well completely hides. Because, like, when you see American Badass Undertaker, he actually has fantastic facial expressions, which he's never allowed to use, really, mm-hmm. you know, because he's got to play this kind of, like, subdued dead person. But, like, he's actually got really funny facial expressions. I can only imagine what his eyes would have done had we got to see them. then we get what I thought was just an absolutely inspirational video where we got to know Ken Shamrock. He's lifting weights. He's walking his dog. We just get to know the man behind Ken Shamrock, Sandra.
I mean, but do we, though? Because, like, the interesting thing is, like, I heard Ken Shamrock on Steve Austin's podcast whenever he did that, a couple years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know the stories of abuse that Ken Shamrock went through. I know, like, I don't remember all of the details, but I remember there being a lot of shit in Ken Shamrock's childhood and upbringing, and it being, you know, his foster father who basically took him out of real bad situations and kind of saved his life and kind of, you know, led him down the path to becoming the world's most dangerous man and whatnot. And it's actually a very interesting story. What we find out here is that Ken Shamrock is a challenger. He loves challenges. He works the best to challenge himself. Challenge. That's basically what we learned from Ken Shamrock. He fears no one. He challenged Mike Tyson. Something about not being afraid of failure. And he's like, the will to win is the will to prepare to win. So he's basically just speaking in inspirational posters at this point. And he talks about what he went through. He keeps saying, what I went through made me the man I am today. But he never even says anything about what he went through. So you just have to assume that he went through some stuff. If he would have even said, like, I had a childhood of abuse and what I went through has made me into the man I am today, that would be a little more,
Sandra can sit here when we're trying to introduce Ken Shamrock. We're showing him lifting weights. We're showing him walking his dog. And Sandra's like, I mean, he really needed to tell me more about his childhood abuse for me to be on board.
But that's the whole premise of the video, is like, what I went through. What the fuck did you go through?
He went through hardship, Sandra. He had to lift weights. He has to walk his dog on a daily fucking basis.
Yes, such hardships.
You don't have a dog. You don't walk a dog.
Video. I don't have a dog because I don't want to face the hardship of having to walk a dog every day.
You don't lift weights?
No, I don't. That's accurate as well. I lift beer boxes.
So when you lift weights and walk a dog, you can understand the hardships of Ken Shamrock.
Yes, exactly.
Then, I think you're just a cut under his jib, to be honest.
Apparently I am. But I'm just saying, I feel like this video would have been a little more interesting if we saw, you know, if we're trying to introduce Ken Shamrock and go through his childhood. Like, the video that we just saw on Roderick Strong in NXT, which you probably haven't seen because you've been super busy all week, but
people have told me to watch it.
Fucking phenomenal. Like, it is the first character progression we've seen from Roderick Strong in NXT, and it, like, it made me tear up because you find out about, like, his mom shooting his dad and, like, where he grew up, and you find out about actual hardships, right? Ken Shamrock looks like a fucking Viagra commercial here.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have drug ads in the UK, but trust me, this is basically, like...
I mean, I feel like this is... The thing about Ken Shamrock, you know, like, guys, you know, if we're listening to this, right? And we're males and you know, we're watching this. Ken Shamrock is what we all aspire to be physically. If we could
he
all
is a beautiful specimen of a human.
If we could all press a button. Now, sadly, he now looks a bit like Aileen Wuornos. But if you take that away, back here
this
in the 90s.
20 years ago, Ken Shamrock, though. I mean...
Exactly.
Well, he's a fine human.
What I've learned from wrestling is it doesn't matter how you look in your 30s. It's how you keep it. Look at Bret Hart now. Jesus fuck.
Well, the stroke didn't help.
No, it didn't, but still, there's little things you can do.
Yes.
You know.
Although, as we've talked about before, you will always be the Jane Fonda to my Lily Tomlin in this conversation.
You're so much more Lily Tomlin than I could ever be Jane Fonda. And there's a TV show called Grace and Frankie, by the way, which is really funny. That's got these two old women that, like...
Yeah, they're in their 70s.
They're in their 70s and, like, they've...
Did you know Jane Fonda is 79?
It's insane.
I looked it up because, like, I think on the show she's younger, but I looked it up to be like, oh, how old is she actually? She's 79 and she looks like that. Anyway.
So, yeah, basically the premise of the show is these two women... They're married to, like, Martin Sheen and this other actor. And
Sam Waterston.
Sam Waterston, and they're lawyers. But it turns out they've been gay with each other for, like, years, and then they...
For, like, 40 years.
So they just, like, dump the wives, and then the wives have to go and live together. And, like, Lily Tomlin's a complete, like, spacey hippie, kind of like Sandra.
Yeah.
And then Jane Fonda's obsessed with her looks and just drinks vodka all the time, kind of like me. So, mm-hmm. We've taken our roles on. But anyway...
We know that in, you know, 40 years, that's totally going to be us.
Yeah, pretty much. But Vader's back now, and he murders Double J Jesse James. Yay!
He does. I just wrote down, like, as soon as Vader was coming out, I was like, ah, ha, 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 poor Jesse Jammies, because he's going to get killed, and then he does.
He does, and it's glorious to watch. Now, Jim Ross is angry on commentary about this, like... About how he's destroyed. Because, like, he has Jesse James pinned and he doesn't pin him and he, like...
He does the thing where he pulls the opponent up instead of pinning him because he's like, no, I'm going to punish you even further because I can. Because I want to hit a Vader bomb also. Because I have beaten you too quickly and I haven't gotten all my shit in yet.
I fucking love Vader. Oh, he's so good at being a dick. So JR is, like, really... JR is going to go and interview him. And Vince is like... JR is going to be confrontational. And you're like, why? Why would Jim Ross want to be confrontational with a man who has literally just beat up a television host and been kept in a country?
And also, wasn't it Vader who beat up Gorilla Monsoon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has a history of beating up non-performers.
So JR, like, gives Vader some flack and he's like, you know, why would you do this? And Vader's, he talks about the incident in Kuwait and, you know, does he feel any remorse for it? Does he regret it? Does he want to say sorry? Vader says he isn't sorry for anything, and then JR kind of, like, prods him a little bit, and he's like, you know, isn't there anything that you're sorry about from that last week? Because you've not only embarrassed yourself, you've embarrassed the WWF, you've embarrassed all of us, and da-da-da-da. Which is kind of like a meta shoot thing, because he kind of did embarrass everyone.
Yeah, he did.
And then Vader's, like, basically threatening to fight JR, so he, like, takes his glasses off and takes his hat off, and JR's like, nope. I don't want to fight you. And then Vader gets JR in the corner, about to do something when Shamrock comes in and belly-to-belly suplexes Vader.
It's so good.
And Vader can't fucking believe what's just happened. Like, I don't remember Ken Shamrock and Vader being this good, but it is really good.
It's really good. I love it. I mean, they're really pushing Vader as a bully, which was very interesting to watch in light of, you know, all of the conversations that have been going on about WWE and bullying and all that kind of stuff right now, right? And it's not like they haven't done stories like this in recent years. I mean, remember when Ryback was a bully? I do. It wasn't this interesting. And, you know, Vader said he, you know, went to Kuwait to do a job, and he did his job very well, and that's to beat up people. So he beat someone up. He apologizes for nothing. Like, of course. And I thought it was really interesting how JR kind of tap danced around the is wrestling fake question. He's like, I'm not going to ask that question. I'm going to ask, do you think you overreacted to that question? Because, you know, they don't even really want to broach the subject of, like, is wrestling fake? Is wrestling not fake? Da, 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 da. And he, like, takes a while to set up that question, which just was intriguing to me. And that's when, you know, he goes to beat him up. But fucking Ken Shamrock, like, I swear the video package about Ken Shamrock made him look more bland. And if they would have just done this and not the video package, I think it almost would have been more effective.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that this was such an effective segment to get, like you say, Vader over as a bully and Ken Shamrock over as a legitimate fighter. It's a very clever story.
Ken Shamrock's a superhero right now, basically.
Yeah.
Like, Ken Shamrock's the one who also pulled Bret Hart off of, you know, a bloody, dead, dying Steve Austin in the ring. Ken Shamrock was the one who had to save Steve Austin from evil bully Bret Hart. And, like, he's the one who threw Bret Hart, you know? So, like, Ken Shamrock is basically the guy showing up to help those in peril. And I love that. Because, I mean, Superman's my favorite superhero, right? So, Ken Shamrock's being like Superman.
He is. And I think that the thing that's interesting is that they've really booked Ken Shamrock in his transition from MMA to wrestling very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't really say they could do it any better, to be honest.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
So, major props. So, from there, we have Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Obviously, after last week when Marlena...
Wow, we've never seen this match before.
Never. But, you know, we're seeing it again because, obviously, last week, Goldust and Marlena attacked Hunter and China from the crowd, and Marlena chokes the shit out of China. And, you know,
I love that.
I'm not going to pretend that this is a great match, but the great part of it, for me, is that Marlena shoves powder in China's face.
Yeah.
So China can't
I thought it was interesting that Goldust tells Marlena not to come out tonight.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, wants to protect Marlena. And, like, you would want to protect Marlena. You know, you would want to protect her from China. Because it's one thing to get, like, one thing on China, but, like, one-on-one, it's not really a fair fight. Like, China's...
No, I mean, Marlena's not a wrestler. I get it. Just Goldust is like, it's no place for a lady. And Marlena's like, but I want to come out with you. Like, I want to support you, and I want to be there to help you.
And
so when she does...
Out, yeah.
Yeah, and when she does come out and gets the powder thrown at Marlena and she chokes Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and it's great. I love seeing Marlena get one up on them.
And then the good thing is, like, so China gets the powder put in her face, and then when Triple H goes to help her, she just starts beating up Hunter and, like, choking him. So Goldust,
because she's blind and she thinks it's Goldust.
Yeah, so this was fun. It was good.
I feel like this was actual kind of comeuppance for Hunter and China, which it doesn't seem like you would be able to get if a woman isn't involved in the situation. So I know that going forward, if she's feuding with men who don't have valets or whatever, then we're not going to get this kind of cool stuff. But I'm just kind of curious if China coming in would have been as effective without Marlena too.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
Because I think, like, that's part of what's making it work for me. I mean, China's big and scary and amazing, and I love her. But I kind of like the fact that their first feud together, they have some way of kind of getting comeuppance, and, you know, there's some give and take to it, even though Goldust is absolute dog shit. Like, I don't want to see any more Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley matches.
Come on now.
He's very bad.
He's fine.
I guess.
No, he's not.
I'm still very distracted by his gear. Like, he added black to his gear, but left the penis gold? I just don't understand why you would make that decision. It doesn't make sense. But,
yeah, but
I don't know. I like the fact that we're seeing some comeuppance. There was a weird bit of commentary during this match where I think it was Vince was like, Shades of Ellen, the television show Ellen this Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen, will have nothing on the World Wrestling Federation because check this out, Goldust comes out of the closet here next week. Though I would suggest Goldust is not what you think he is and never has been. What?
Hmm.
I'm not looking forward to that because also, haven't we already determined that, you know, aren't you? No. Ah, with Jerry Lawler? Like, wasn't that a whole thing already? So what even is this? They're just trying to capitalize on the fact that Ellen came out as gay on TV?
Probably.
Fuck's sake.
Again, it's like, it's I'm not condoning it, sounds like I am, but it's interesting to listen to 1997 sometimes, because there's things that I feel like in society was okay to say that now we're just like, can't say that stuff, you know? Which is a good thing that you can't say anymore.
Yeah.
But like, it's interesting that, like, you know, like there's some stuff like that, they'll make a little Ellen jibe, but then, you know, there's other stuff they wouldn't dare go near. It's I was talking to an ICW wrestler who will remain nameless about a spot that he had done with like with one of his genitals, and he talked about like he had it had been like the genitals had been left out for too long, Sandra, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And they blurred it out, but the way that it looked was that he was masturbating over the other wrestler, and he got a lot of like flack from people online, and it wasn't like wrestling, it was homophobia, you know.
Oh.
And he was kind of laughing because he's like, listen, he's like, I'm not gay, but I don't have a problem with people who are. And he was like, it's funny to me that, like, of all the things to make fun of, you're not making fun of the fact that I'm getting my dick out in front of 500 people and swirling it around, but you're more like, ugh, he might be sexing him. You know, like that's
like that's the thing that people immediately go to.
That's the concern. Anyway, so yeah, Goldust Hunter wasn't too great, but it did give us a little bit more of Marlena getting comeuppance, which is good given where we started on that last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for an Undertaker promo in the dark with him on the Tron and Vince talking to him. Undertaker talks about Steve Austin having momentum, but if he comes in distracted at Cold Day in Hell, he might leave in far worse shape than being in a wheelchair. And then what I found...
No. What he says, Kenny, if you come in distracted, you may leave in worse shape than what a wheelchair will take you.
That's the same thing.
No. It doesn't make sense.
So are you busy doing a murder?
Yes. I'm not. I'm not doing a murder, although I did just kill a fly.
So you just did a murder. Okay.
So I just did a murder.
But what I found interesting at the end of it was Undertaker said, son, you may just rest in peace. So, like, Steve Austin is making Undertaker come slightly out of that dead man thing.
He's speaking at a more regular human cadence.
Which is interesting. For sure. For, you know, the fact that Steve Austin's a character that demands he has to take it a little bit more seriously.
So, yeah, I mean, he does started out kind of like in creepy Undertaker
Undertaker.
You know, but he's even talking a little quicker because I didn't write down everything that he said because I wasn't going to like pause it, not like the way I do for Sid. But he was just like, no man deserves to have the flesh burn from his face. But there's an old saying, the one who covets the flame ends up being burnt. So we're all still talking about fire and whatnot, which wasn't even about Austin. That was about Mankind. But then he kind of moves on to Austin. There's a lot of stuff at play here.
Which I love.
Which I like, because it makes it interesting.
And up next we have Brian Pillman praying for Steve Austin to basically be beaten up by the Hart Foundation. We're going to show him that backstage. And then we come to the second of our reality check ads. Nicholas was a grade A student. Now, he's Stone Cold Steve Austin. he won't eat cauliflower or broccoli or tidy his room. So I have down... So here's what I have written down. Nicholas was a grade A student, now he's Steve Austin. He won't eat cauliflower, broccoli, or tidy his room. I must have been Steve Austin too then. Because I didn't like cauliflower or broccoli or tidying my room, so... If that's the...
I didn't like any of those things either. Maybe I was Steve Austin as well. I'm just... These reality check ads really just are leading me to believe that the WWF leads you down a path of debauchery and dementia. So I'm not sure what they're meaning to accomplish. No, I love the debauchery and dementia, but I just don't know if you want to advertise that to children. I was a little more disturbed by this one because, like, the old man seemed to clearly be suffering from dementia, which, you know... Fair enough, if he wants to be Vader in Mankind, if that helps him get through his day.
I don't know if that's dementia or just having a good time.
Well, the way I took the ad was that he seemed to be suffering from dementia and thought that he was Vader and Mankind.
Okay.
Which, okay, fine. But this is a child emulating a wrestler. And he's not only just emulating any wrestler. He's not emulating Ken Shamrock, who's this amazing role model superhero. He's emulating Stone Cold Steve Austin, who swears all the time and, like, flips people off and is horrible to everyone. And the parents are like, well, I guess so.
Oops. I love it. I love these ads. All these ads are great.
I love them. I just don't know what message they're trying to convey. I'm still very confused about that.
It is main event time, though. We get the British Bulldog versus The Undertaker, which they have good chemistry together, I think, actually.
Yeah.
And, Bulldog seems to be holding his own against Taker as Bret and Owen look on.
He dedicates this match to Bret Hart as well, the man who introduced him to his lovely wife, Diana. His inspiration, Bret Hart.
Why can't more families be like the Harts?
I know.
But
well,
then,
I mean, didn't end that well for
well,
them.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. But in the Bulldog would end up getting chokeslammed, and that would be Owen Hart's cue to interfere. Owen Hart and Bulldog beat on Undertaker, but Steve Austin runs out to make the save. And then what's interesting is Steve Austin takes Taker's belt and raises the belt up on the ropes and turns around to see Undertaker kind of, you know, staring a hole through him. Austin then stunners Undertaker, flips him
it's
off.
It's so beautiful.
This whole sequence is great because he stunners Undertaker, but then he gets cocky and he stands over Undertaker to flip him off, which mm-hmm. of course means Undertaker grabs him by the throat and choke slams him. So Undertaker is kind of like standing tall, I guess, while Austin's on the outside, but then Austin notices that Bret's all alone up on the top of the ramp, and he goes up to get his, you know, comeuppance on Bret, I guess, or to just continue to beat on a helpless man in a wheelchair, whichever way you want to look at it.
What I love about it is he turns to Undertaker, he goes, I'll beat your ass later. And then he turns to Bret Hart and goes, I'll beat your ass now.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, he's so good.
And I thought the Undertaker-Austin exchange was really fun. I really enjoyed seeing them have a back and forth. So
well, it was crazy because Austin was helping the Undertaker because he was against Owen and Bulldog, but then realized, like, hey, I want that belt, so I'm also going to stunner you because I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin and I hate everybody. It was great.
And then Austin goes for Bret when from behind.
From out of nowhere. Did not expect to see him show up. Jin the Anvil Neidhart is beating up Austin.
The Anvil is back. The family is complete. The other brother-in-law, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who looked fantastic compared to what he looks like on Total Divas. Fuck.
I mean, I still want a Total Neidhart spin-off, I'm not going to lie. But
Anvil's just beating the piss out of Steve Austin. Bret hits Austin with his crutch and throws him off the stage. And then Anvil helps Bret to the back. Austin's done. Pillman's happy. We go off there. I thought this whole main event situation was really, really fun.
It was really, really fun. And ending with Pillman's just maniacal face, just laughing after his head was bowed because he's bowing it in prayer. And then he looks up like he's the Joker or something and is just like, ha, 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 ha. All of it, all of the interplay between all of the stories going on with the Hart Foundation and you know, Undertaker and Austin, Anvil's back, and just there's so much chaos. And I think it's the type of chaos where you don't just sit back there and go, okay, well, I mean, this is happening for no reason. Everyone's just brawling. It was all chaos that made sense and that happened in an order that made sense. I mean, I've never understood coming in to, like, beat an opponent up when they're going to win a match when it's not for a title or something. Like, I don't understand why Owen would attack the Undertaker just because Bulldog was about to lose, because that means Bulldog loses anyway. It's always this weird hang-up I've had, but that's just me. Other than that little nitpicky detail, I loved everything about this.
This was a really fast episode to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're really starting to get the flow of a two-hour show.
And there was a through-line thread, which I think helps so much, because then, you know, it's like, what is the Hart Foundation doing now?
Yeah.
Because it was kind of all about what they were doing, and Brian Pillman was kind of the weird, crazy man tying it all together with his prayers.
Yeah, we had all the stuff with the Hart Foundation, The Undertaker and Austin and Pillman. We had, you know, the Furnace and LaFon getting a storyline. We had Owen Hart win the IC title. We had Vader and Shamrock further in their great feud. We had some resolution to Goldust and Hunter. We had some fun reality check ads. thumbs up for me for this one.
Yeah, actually, thumbs up for me too. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to.
Hopefully that will continue as we go forward to the go-home show for A Cold Day in Hell coming up on Friday. Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter, which will be invented in 13 years from when this aired?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And to hear us talk retro pay-per-views, to hear David and Kenny talk payback, all sorts of other bonus content on Patreon. Classic ITR is going up every week again. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and thank you for all your support. Thank you for the nice messages as well about the Alberto thing. It really does mean a lot that people are going out their way to wish me well. It's nice. You people are lovely. Thank you very much. We'll see you on Friday. Well, actually, we'll see you in a day or two for SmackDown Summary. Where,
yay!
Well,
maybe.
I don't know if I'm yaying at that, to be honest.
We will see if it's a yay or not. I'm kind of fascinated to see what's going to happen on Tuesday with the whole Chris Jericho situation.
Yeah, well, I feel like Ryan Ward was sent to Raw last night for a night, so I'm like, please come back.
Oh, see, I haven't even watched Raw yet. I haven't had a chance. So.
Really fun episode. Really
I haven't fun. Had a day off of work in a long time.
Yeah, you need to get a day off.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna be covering Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens, the rematch for the United States Championship, which has been advertised for SmackDown tonight on Raw. That's been advertised. Nakamura, I guess, is going to be on the show. Who else we got? Oh, sorry. Gender fucking Mahal. who can't even do a belt shot properly. Anyway, I'm not even going to go there. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Course.
Bye.
Bye.
I mean, I just can't believe he's the lineage of that belt. I mean, it goes from Austin and Bret and Taker to him.
You don't know that he's going to be the lineage of the belt yet.
I can feel it in my fucking war. Bye, everyone.
We'll see. Bye.